From Hollidaysburg to Warren, Williamsport to Pittsburgh, this is a Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the war against fossil fuels does not take into consideration the many ways the byproducts of natural gas are used to make many of the items that make our daily lives possible. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Steve Bloom are here for a Capitol Watch discussion. And an off-the-cuff remark by Joe Biden about ousting Vladimir Putin from power caused a diplomatic uproar. I'll have a town hall commentary on why the president may have revealed his true thoughts. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The inflation rate is running at a 40-year high, and the Philadelphia region is no exception. According to the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, the inflation rate in Philadelphia has surged 7.3% since a year ago. Inflation has been running high for about a year now, and economists do not expect it to drop significantly in the months ahead. Energy prices have fueled the spike in inflation. A recent poll conducted for the Business Labor Coalition Pittsburgh Works Together found 73% of Pennsylvanians want the Commonwealth to continue tapping its natural gas resources. Energy production has been a hot topic in Harrisburg, as Governor Tom Wolf has pushed a radical environmental agenda, including attempting to embroil the state in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, which would have the impact of suppressing the state's energy development. Meanwhile, the state's rate of population growth continues to lag behind the rest of the nation. The Center Square reports that new data estimates from the Census Bureau show that Pennsylvania has struggled to grow during the COVID-19 pandemic, while states in the South and the West have increased their populations. Generally speaking, northern states implemented more draconian restrictions during the pandemic than southern states. The population trend has also been a shift away from more populous counties to medium and smaller counties. The greatest growth over the past 2 years has been in Texas, Florida, Arizona, California, and Utah, while Pennsylvania's total population fell by 25,000. An analysis of campaign finance by Transparency USA found that Republican members of the Pennsylvania State Senate have topped their Democrat colleagues in fundraising. In total, Republican senators and candidates have raised $5.75 million in the most recent reporting period, while Democrats raised $4.25 million. State Senate Majority Leader Kim Ward of Westmoreland County was the most successful Republican fundraiser, raking in over $1.1 million. Senator Marty Flynn was the top Democratic fundraiser, reporting contributions of over $900,000. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Radical environmentalists are working hard to depress the production of oil and natural gas. But the byproducts of fossil fuels are used in many, if not most, of the items that we use in everyday life. Our Capitol Watch crew is here with details. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Always great to be here, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to be with you.
Wonderful to be here, David.
So I'm coming off a pretty good week. As things started off, I had the great privilege of testifying in front of the House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee, where I was invited to talk about the role that the byproducts from oil and natural gas play in our economy and society. And it's a topic that I was really pleased to address because I don't think everyday folks understand the degree to which every single thing that we have and all of the, you know, goods and services and experiences that the economy brings to us, all of those things are powered by industry and catalyzed by chemistry. And so, you know, I was talking about how petrochemical manufacturing is actually a, a towering achievement of modern civilization. And if we didn't have energy from naturally occurring hydrocarbons and petrochemical manufacturing, essentially our lifestyle would revert to that of the Native Americans.
And if you think about it, most people, when they hear the word hydrocarbons or fossil fuels, they think either things that heat our homes or make our vehicles go.
Right.
The things we burn for fuel, for energy, for heat. And I think it's often overlooked that on top of all that, which is certainly vital, critical, mobility is the key to a prosperous society, there's this whole other world of what happens with these resources. And I think that's fascinating. I know in the natural gas industry, they talk about, you know, of course, there's the natural gas at the wellhead,
right,
and then it's transmitted to facilities that they call midstream,
mm-hmm,
that are really almost like sorting facilities to take out the different parts, chemical parts of that natural gas liquid. And then there's the downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you're talking about today, the downstream. What happens to these products other than the things that most consumers are familiar with, putting gasoline in your car and burning it up for mobility?
Right. I mean, you have the natural gas, the methane, that's used for home heating and cooking, for industrial furnaces, and for electricity generation. But along with that, you have these other chemicals that wind up being the feedstocks for making all different kinds of products. You have ethane, butane, pentane, propane, and that each one of these things, actually the methane itself, each one of them has a value chain that, depending on how you process it, it can yield all kinds of different goods. You know, this polyethylene facility that's going to become operational this year in Beaver County, the Royal Dutch Shell facility, that it is going to yield the feedstock for every kind of plastic, styrofoam, rubber, paint, glaze, solvent, adhesive, all of the inputs that go into every kind of product that we, you know, purchase and use every day. And that's what I was trying to get across to the committee, is to say it isn't just the final article itself, the final product, that it's all of the machines and tools that went into making that product and all of the inputs that went into making those machines and tools, that when you look at the whole life cycle, the whole universe of these products that we've come to, you know, completely assume and take for granted, whether it's, you know, plastic kitchen trash bags, or you know, whether it's the protective coatings on our eyeglasses, or I mean, you name it, it's an infinite spectrum of stuff. All of those things are made possible by energy and chemistry. And if we would be without those things, then that our lifestyle, it's not just that our lifestyle would be changed. I brought up these statistics, and when I found it, it really blew my mind. So since 1865, American life expectancy has more than doubled. That in 1865, life expectancy was 35 years old. In 2020, it was 78.9 years old. The changes in agricultural production that were made possible by replacing animals, you know, mules and horses and oxen, replacing them with tractors that were fueled by petroleum. The amount of labor saved, but also the amount of agricultural yield that was gained, because you the farmer before would set aside a certain percentage of the crop to feed the work animals so that the animals could till the field. So the combination of these labor-saving devices with tractors and harvesters that were mechanized and powered by petroleum, and the increased yield from not having to feed the animals, it left so much more food to feed human beings. And to this day, America has some of the lowest food costs in the world.
Not to mention the fact, I mean, you mentioned the sort of automation of agriculture, but not to mention the fertilizer, which of course also comes from natural gas.
Yes.
And other products like that as well. But as you're sitting here talking, David, about the products that we're able to benefit from a societal standpoint. But my head is just spinning thinking of all the jobs that are created as a result
oh, my
of
goodness.
That feedstock, and how it is you know, processed throughout the economy into those final goods.
We have over 500,000 jobs on the plant floor in Pennsylvania, but moreover, that core manufacturing activity sustains millions of additional Pennsylvania jobs because you have all of the full reach of the supply chains and the distribution networks and all of the vendors for the industrial services. And of course, then all of the purchasing power from the employees and the vendors and all these things that reverberates through the economy. And again, if we didn't have energy and if we didn't have all of these petrochemical manufacturing contributions, that none of this would be possible, or at least it would be diminished to a very great degree. Like, you know, when talking about the tools and the machines that make the products and the inputs for the tools and the machines, that there are a lot of, you know, industrial coatings and there's a lot of, you know, mining and refining and processing and fabrication to make those machines, to make those tools that then are deployed to make the finished product. And you know, I mean, like here's another example. You know, we all love our cell phones and our mobile electronics, and you know, it fits in our pocket, and we turn it on and off, and we think, well, maybe there's a plastic case and there's a glass, you know, front, and we think maybe of those inputs. But the only reason that those technologies work is because we have satellites in space, and because we have all of these cell towers to, you know, to amplify signal. I have one of those not far from my home in Dauphin County, and I was driving home one day and that cell tower was being serviced. And it was being serviced by this enormous crane. And so you have the guy, you know, in the work boots and the hard hat and the, you know, he's there in the great big giant crane, and you stop to think, like, oh my goodness, imagine what it takes to make a big dinosaur-sized machine like that. You know, you go down to Shippensburg to Volvo Construction, you see them, you know, assembling, producing these massive machines for earth-moving equipment and other kinds of really heavy work. All of the industrial inputs that go into those machines are necessary to make those machines to service the cell tower so that we can get signal. So it's not just a little glass box in your pocket. It's that entire network.
And it's, you talk about at the macro level, food, clothing, shelter, the things that humanity needs to survive. Those things are the basic factors in life expectancy. But then you add to that, and all of those things are driven by these products that
Correct.
We're talking about, these hydrocarbon-based products. When you think about drilling down on the micro level into almost any realm, you immediately see it. Something you said, Dave, made me think about a police officer.
Yes.
A police officer, perhaps she arrives at the scene of a crime in her cruiser, which of course is full of all sorts of plastics and derivatives and materials that were made directly from these hydrocarbons. She steps out of her vehicle. She's wearing a bulletproof vest.
Mm-hmm.
Those didn't used to exist.
Correct.
Police officers were very vulnerable, especially in those moments of responding to a call. And they were often immediately hurt or killed.
Right.
Now they're wearing Kevlar vests and Kevlar materials, helmets, equipment that prevents the loss of life in a stark way. It stops the bullet.
Yep.
And it's part of what we look at. Or you could take it and go in another direction that's so mundane as going home and opening your own refrigerator. Look around a bit. First, look at the refrigerator.
Yes. Yes.
It's made of all this stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Then what? Where's the electricity that's – typically you have electric refrigerator. I guess there's some gas refrigerators as well. But you know, where's the energy source that's keeping it cool? That's coming from these materials. And then everything you're storing in there, it's in little containers
yeah.
made of these materials.
Mm-hmm. All those things then relate also to healthcare, because without the electricity to power the refrigerator, without the technology for refrigeration itself, that there are many medicines that would expire and that people wouldn't be able to have, you know, healthcare in that way. You look at, you know, a modern surgical suite at a hospital, and you look at all of those pieces of equipment and the, you know, the IV tubing and the drip bag and the syringes and the flexible bandages. It's like all of those things are forms of plastic. And all of the, you know, all of the machinery, these are things that couldn't be produced except for the contributions of energy and chemistry to make the tools, to make the machines, to mine the resources, to make the metals, and on and on and on. And it's just, you know, we live in this world. It's a paradox that these contributions to our quality of life are so completely universal. It's like trying to explain to a fish that he's wet.
Who could be against this? Why are we talking about this today?
Yes.
What is the issue? Why did there have to be a public hearing at which you testified in the Pennsylvania Capitol?
Well, you're listening to Capitol Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation, Rebecca Euler from Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. And Steve, that's a great question because I don't want to be unkind, but the people who are opposed to these pillars of our modern civilization, they've convinced themselves of things that just aren't so, and that there is a again, trying not to be overly provocative, there's a fanaticism, there's a hysteria that people have become afraid of these technologies. They've been made afraid of them, and the fear is very real. The danger is not. In fact, I would argue the greater danger would be cutting off our society from the superabundance of these inputs that allow us to continue to thrive as the quality of life improves, healthcare improves, life expectancy improves, all these things that a lot of these plastics are critical for the great improvements that we've made in sanitation. And, you know, just because we no longer experience the kinds of things that our ancestors experienced, it doesn't mean that those things couldn't come back or wouldn't come back, because they absolutely would. The only reason that we've kept them at bay is because of these ongoing improvements and innovations made possible by energy and chemistry.
You know, you kind of struck home when you were talking about medical equipment. As a type 1 diabetic who relies on insulin, I've heard stories about back in the day when you had to boil syringes every night in order to take your insulin shots.
Right.
I luckily have never been exposed to that, because we have always been fortunate to have plastic syringes and plastic, you know, other medical equipment that I need every day. And I think back on those days when people literally had to boil syringes every day just to make sure that they were able to take their insulin and stay alive.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason why, like you said, life expectancy has really, really dramatically increased. And I feel that firsthand. So I totally agree with you. And I hope we continue to develop these technologies.
And it's actually a paradox in that we have expanded life to such a degree that people are now dying of stuff that they wouldn't have lived long enough to die from before.
True.
You know, we're having these challenges with Alzheimer's, with cancers, and these are challenges that we have to face and overcome. But, you know, as I was inferring, days gone by, people wouldn't usually live long enough to actually encounter those conditions. So there'll always be more work to be done. Nothing, you know, is, was, or ever will be perfect in this earthly life. But the innovation that's been driven by our manufacturing sector. Manufacturers are the number one investors in research and development, and that's actually one of the points I was battling back and forth with one of the legislators at this hearing, that just, you know, saying that, look, if you don't have a strong manufacturing sector today and in the near future, you will not get the investment that will yield these over-the-horizon type breakthroughs that you want to come to pass. Like, we can't just wish these things into existence. We've got to work towards them, and by working towards them, it's going to require that we continue to use the amazing technologies that we have right now.
And study and teach about the history of these innovations, because, you know, I think a lot of the resistance and the fear mongering that you're speaking of about plastics and all these other byproducts that are used every day come from the environmental left.
Yes.
People who profess in any event to be very much concerned about the diversity of our wildlife on our planet.
Right.
If you look at you mentioned the 1800s earlier. In the 1800s, there was a huge industry devoted to capturing and killing whales to get from them their fat, which would be used as a source of oil for lamps.
Correct.
So people would have light at night.
Correct.
Guess what displaced the need to kill whales?
Petroleum. Kerosene.
Kerosene, petroleum jellies, all these things that came from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
From our initial oil and gas wells that were discovered around that time.
Yep.
And suddenly there was no need to kill an animal
Correct.
To have light at night.
Correct. That's absolutely true. And in the same way that the production of petrochemical-based synthetic rubbers meant that you no longer had to go to Indonesia and cut down rubber trees. All these different chemistry-based processes have freed us from having to, exploit nature that way. And again, I would view that as being a really meaningful, societal advancement.
And certainly back then, in the first days of the oil and gas industry in Pennsylvania, it was in some cases fairly reckless the way they treated the environment. But it isn't that way anymore. They're strictly regulated, and they've learned how to process and extract these materials and transport these materials in a way that is safe, that is environmentally conscious, and doesn't cause risk of harm to the natural environment and the wildlife and the people that live there.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing that I've heard is that read a study recently that proved that the more well-off a society is, the more resources it has to spend on conservation and smart resource extraction, like we're talking about.
Correct.
So we want to make sure that we maintain that wealth and that prosperity that we have here in America so that we can continue to devote part of those resources to conservation and to doing things right. So.
Absolutely. No, Rebecca, you're right on target there. And I would also say that the advancements in agriculture with greater yield from existing land, that those gains have allowed more farmland to go fallow and to return to forest, and that again all those advancements reduced impact on the land. So anyway, this brings us to the end of the time that we have for our program. As always, it's great to be together. So, Steve, for the listeners, where can they go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you're doing?
Our website is at commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to find out more about you?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Everybody has an inside-the-head voice and an outside-the-head voice. The inside-the-head voice thinks things that, while perhaps correct, ought not be said. The outside-the-head voice is more restrained, having considered the consequences of verbalizing the inner thought. Sometimes the inside-the-head voice slips out. That happened to President Joe Biden last weekend. Wrapping up a speech at the Royal Castle in Warsaw after meeting with NATO leaders, the president went off script. "For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power," Biden said of Russian President Vladimir Putin. While most of us would agree with the president's sentiments, that one sentence set off a diplomatic firestorm, as it seemed to suggest a shift in official U.S. policy away from containment to regime change. That would be a very big deal. The White House quickly attempted to walk back the comment, saying he meant to say remaining in power in Ukraine. Did the president misspeak, or did he reveal his true thoughts? Much of the world has recoiled in horror at the war crimes and atrocities Putin has unleashed on his peaceful neighbor. While the U.S. is unlikely to send in a hit squad, that being unlawful, an internal coup could be a blessing, assuming some other madman does not take Putin's place. The balance of the president's speech was well received. It was a clarion call for a resolute NATO to assist the Ukrainian people in repelling Russian aggression. Biden exhorted our NATO allies to do more, but he himself has been slow to act. The administration waited until after the Russians had fired the first shot to begin imposing economic sanctions. And when it did, there has been a phased ramping up of sanctions rather than a shock and awe blast to send the Russian economy into a tailspin. On the energy front, Biden has led from behind, and his administration has not altered domestic policies that would allow European nations to wean themselves from Russian oil and natural gas, thus choking off a key source of the rogue state's revenue. He placed an embargo on importing Russian oil into the United States only after bipartisan congressional pressure. In the meantime, the administration has not reversed course on policies that would unleash our own energy resources. Pennsylvania is uniquely positioned to be a key player in a new energy paradigm. We are possessed of an abundant natural gas reserve, and given the necessary pipeline and deportation facilities, could easily supply Europe with the energy it needs. But like Biden, Governor Tom Wolf is a captive of radical environmentalists, continuing to try and curb Pennsylvania's energy production by embroiling us in the ill-fated Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. Biden also bears responsibility for creating the circumstances that led Vladimir Putin to believe he could get away with brutalizing a neighboring country. The administration's disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan telegraphed to the world that America lacked resolve. Putin can smell weakness, and Biden put off a stronger stench than a roadkill skunk. Where Putin miscalculated, however, is that Biden's weakness is not emblematic of the American people. As footage of Russian atrocities played out across our television screens and social media became ablaze with personal posts, outrage grew. Unlike Vietnam, which seemed to be the world the way it was, social media has given us an immediate connection to the Ukrainian people. It is interesting to observe the reaction of younger Americans in particular. It has been 20 years since Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. It has been several generations since Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, and Japanese Emperor Hirohito embroiled the globe in World War II. To them, such atrocities were found in history books, about as real as a video game. But the Russian invasion of Ukraine is unfolding before their very eyes, and they are rightly recoiling in horror. Their voices are leading the chorus for action. And they have been heard at the very highest levels of NATO. Upon conclusion of last week's conference, NATO Deputy General Secretary Mircea Giuliana spoke loudly using his outside-the-head voice, saying, quote, "We are supporting Ukraine in many, many ways, in defense terms, in financial terms, in humanitarian terms. When the time will come, and that time will come, we'll also help Ukraine reconstruct, rebuild their nation because they have earned our admiration. They deserve our support." Indeed they do. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHLM AM and FM in Bloomsburg, along with WCAT FM and WHMX FM in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.